Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to thank the Institute and Henry for inviting me. And this will be a bit of a change of pace from yesterday's talk. Actually, I'm glad that Yin gave his talk first because he was steering towards applications then. Basically, what I'd like to do is to give you an idea of an interesting class of problems, and some of them unresolved. So first, I will give a little background on what simulation-based design optimization is and what the particular challenges are for that problem, and then give you an idea of one method that's designed to deal with at least some aspects of this problem, and give you some computational results. So simulation-based optimization problem comes in two parts. First, there is the simulation problem or the analysis problem, where given a set of design variables, we solve a system of possibly a couple differential equations, which describes the physical behavior of a complex system. We solve this system for the state variables. Out of these state variables can come various integrated quantities of interest to the user of the system. Then the design problem is going to be to solve this general nonlinear programming problem, but whenever you need a function or a constraint evaluation, you have to go and solve your PDE. Now, I call this a canonical formulation because this assumes that your analysis exists in a black box form. For the methods that I'll be talking about, it doesn't have to exist in a black box form. In fact, the methods are applicable to any problem formulation. But the realities are such that one really cannot afford to fiddle with the analysis. If you're doing research in the university, you can build your own solver. But if you are trying to solve a problem that, say, a company presents to you, then you really cannot and probably should not go into, say, an aerodynamic solver or a structural analysis solver. So, some do. Mostly you have to develop your own. And there, I'll talk a little bit about that. There are several ways to go about it. So, in this context, let me take a step back. Any industrial solver won't. It's the latest research solvers that will have their own probably adjoint derived things. So, some industrial people, when they say design, they mean analysis. They really don't talk about optimization much. So in our context, large scale can mean that you have a lot of variables that you manipulate in optimization. But mostly it means that even if you have a few variables or constraints, that is explicit design variables and constraints, the problem is just very computationally expensive. So let me give you an example, which is the set of problems I'm dealing with right now. It's optimization where functions are supplied by computational fluid dynamics models. And the way the problem usually looks is you have the CFD analysis. Into the analysis, you feed a few things which take a really long time to produce and are hard to come by in good quality. You have some description of shape. You have some description, discretization of the problem. You input some conditions and outcome state variables, and out of them you produce quantities such as the measure of drag, lift, and various performance characteristics of an airspace vehicle. So the problem would be to minimize some combination of these integrated qualities subject to all sorts of probably nonlinear constraints. So in a little bit more detail, what enters into the problem? The solvers are usually quite complex, and they are big. You cannot deal with an all-at-once type of formulation. You have to go and do domain decomposition. Into all of that, underneath all that, there is probably a CAD system of some sort. There is some parametrization, which is very non-trivial. There is evaluation of derivative and the actual solvers. And then a very horrible part is that you need to move the mesh underneath the problem and adapt as you go along in the solution of optimization. Virtually anybody, any analyst worth his salt can build, can solve an analysis at a nominal point where somebody works for a long time, builds a very nice mesh, out comes something. Move that mesh a little bit and things go really bad. So there are a lot of components that come into producing a single function evaluation or a constraint evaluation, and they're derivatives. So the state of the art is really, if anyone does optimization, is you do all of that complicated machinery, produce a function, feed it into a very elementary optimizer, maybe something related to steepest descent or something, and take a few steps and hope for improvement. So to give you an idea of computational expense, this is an average size problem of a turbulent computation on a million grid points. From industrial perspective, it's a toy problem. We have access to a big network of origins. Takes a day to submit, takes 3-4 days to wait in the queue, and takes 8 hours per design cycle. A design cycle does a function, a derivative, and possibly a line search. So needless to say, the cost of solving an optimization problem is very much driven by simulations. Sensitivity analysis is actually, I should say, no, it's driven by the sensitivity analysis because that's much more expensive still. And consider all this is for simple single point optimization. When you're doing design of physical systems, you want to do robust design. You want to be optimal with respect to a lot of conditions. So if you are, you need to go up, you need to stay up, and then you need to land. And well, one hopes anyway. And one needs to be optimal for all of these conditions. And then there is, of course, this latest topic that's very much in vogue, which is design under uncertainty, and that consumes resources like you wouldn't believe. So we really need to start looking at minimizing expense somehow. So here is a set of some major obstacles to simulation-based design. And when I'm thinking of this, I usually think of CFD-based optimization right now, but this is a lot more general, of course. So first of all, geometry of good quality and robust grid movements is extremely difficult to do. People have accomplished a lot of things in two dimensions. But in 3D, there are all sorts of very cool attempts to do things like morphing in the movies. But it's very, very hard when you have volume mesh. With the surface, you can do a lot of things. Parametrizations of shapes and their derivatives are also not found lying on the road. You kind of have to have people do them for you, and they are not automatic. That's the most difficult part. From the modeling side, as I mentioned, the functions are expensive, not automatic. At any point, the analysis may break down, and it may either break down because you don't have your bound constraints, do not define, and even your nonlinear constraints, do not define the area properly where the analysis is valid. So going over to the airspace vehicles, lots of analysis apply in the area of, say, subsonic or supersonic, and then you have the transonic region where things are going to break down. So as I also mentioned, very difficult to get reliable and affordable derivatives, but the fault is not all engineers. For optimization, when people write good optimization algorithms, they do not really have all these simulation-based problems in mind. So, for instance, lots of algorithms expect to have separate access to constraints and objectives. This is a really bad assumption. Once you do the analysis, you really have to use every bit of information. You can't just say, give me that constraint over there. And we really don't recover gracefully from failed function evaluations. If a function fails, lots of commercial software will probably croak. It is very attractive to do derivative-free optimization, which is a method that's very much in vogue and which engineers really like. But it is not feasible because of the expense. It takes too many function evaluations. So things like genetic algorithms are out for this. So an approach that I'm taking is relying kind of on, or at least hopes to rely on, best in both worlds. In engineering, researchers have used lots of models and approximations for a very long time, but they've done it in a very ad hoc sort of fashion. One approach is to try to collect as much data as one can and build a bulletproof response surface, and then just deal with that response surface. Well, of course, getting an optimum of a response surface does not guarantee you're getting an optimum of the actual function. People would also use the so-called low-fidelity models or surrogates, as Yin mentioned yesterday, and would apply some corrections, but again, there would never be a guarantee of convergence to the actual optimum. Now, in math programming, we worry about convergence, but we usually look at Taylor series approximations, and they're not practical here. So for model management, the method are called approximation and model management, I'd like to use the models that engineers use, but I'd like to do it in a rigorous manner to guarantee convergence to the actual optimum. And this is really a method that can be imposed on any gradient-based algorithm. So what sorts of variable fidelity models can one use? Data fitting models. If you can afford it, you can build all sorts of, you can sample your design space, build response surfaces, and use those. The difference is you wouldn't use them once, you would do an update to them. However, they suffer from the so-called curse of dimensionality, and for instance, if you build a polynomial response surface in a sort of a naive fashion for even 8 design variables, you need maybe 50 function evaluations. And that can be prohibitive if a function takes, a few days to compute. Another method in fashion right now is reduced order models, like per-orthogonal decomposition. And there you construct a basis for the high fidelity model. And by high fidelity, I mean the best, the most accurate model that you're using at the time. There, however, also dependent on the number of design variables you have, because you have to expose the modes of the problem. Now, the three in red or in pink are models that did not explicitly depend on the number of variables, and so they're of interest. Variable accuracy models, that is when you have, and you frequently do when you do analysis, you can specify the tolerance to which you're going to converge your analysis. Unfortunately, the tolerance usually has to do with the state variables of interest. So for an airplane, it might be pressures on the wing, but the value you're really interested in is the drag, which is some integral over the surface of the pressure. And so it is sometimes very difficult to connect the quantity, the bounds on the quantity in which you're interested, with bounds on the thing that you tend to control. Variable resolution models, on the other hand, to which one would sort of add multi-grid models, are the single physical model evaluated on meshes of different degree of refinement. And finally, probably the most intriguing combination is the variable fidelity physics models. Going to aerodynamics, the models would range from, say, lifting line to Navier-Stokes equations, or more realistically, from inviscid incompressible flow to Navier-Stokes equations for nonlinear viscous flows. Why am I saying that this is the most intriguing combination? Is because here you cannot expect the low-fidelity models to have any sort of predictive qualities with respect to the high-fidelity model. So the idea is this. In conventional optimization, the optimizer and the analysis codes directly talk to each other. The optimizer gives you an X, and the analysis code will provide you an F and constraints and derivatives. In model management, we're trying to shift the computational load on the low fidelity models that will have a systematic correction applied to those. But they will not be arbitrary models. They can be in principle. But we're going to assure that the trends of the low fidelity models are similar to the trends in the high fidelity models. And we're going to use trust regions to guarantee convergence. So the current focus is on data fitting models if they're affordable and on those three combinations of models that I've described. So the convergence of the algorithms is going to rely on ensuring this similarity of trends. Suppose we have F tilde equality constraint C, E tilde and CI tilde inequalities to be some lower fidelity models of F, CI, and CE. Then at each major iteration of the model management algorithm, the models will be required to satisfy first order consistency. First order consistency means that the functions and derivatives match at that point. So what we're trying to get here is very simply to make sure that at least locally, the models with this property will mimic the behavior of the Taylor series models. And then we'll hope that the properties will remain good over a large region. Now, it's really easy to enforce this when you have derivatives, but you do need derivatives for problems like this anyway. So how can one enforce this consistency? There are lots of ways. Here is a very simple one due to Hafka in 91, a structural engineer. If you are given any two models, these could be any two functions. Call them F high for high fidelity and F low for low fidelity. If you define a function, that's their ratio. And then, given a point, build a first order model of that ratio. Then if you multiply the low fidelity function by that ratio, the point at X will naturally satisfy zero order consistency and first order consistency. So you can make, of course, any two functions match at a point. And if you had more derivatives, you could make a match to higher order. But no matter what anyone says, higher derivatives in simulations are problematic, even though people are beginning to look at second order derivatives. So convergence versus performance. As I said, you can impose this on any gradient-based algorithm. So convergence analysis relies on the fact that you have this matching at some point of the high and low fidelity. And the standard assumptions for convergence of whichever underlying algorithm you happen to use for this model management. For convergence, we really need the notion of two models. One that we say is the truth or high fidelity model, and the other which we say is a low fidelity model. But of course, this will be also applicable if you have suites of models. And in fact, when you do, it makes sense to use entire suites of models and tighten, say, your convergence by notches as you need. Practical efficiency, not surprisingly, will be model dependent and problem dependent. And what this really depends on is on our ability to transfer the computational load on the low fidelity model. And this will depend, in turn, on the predictive quality of the low-fidelity model. Now, notice when engineers say predictive, they mean for the purposes of analysis. They mean that F has to be good with respect to the other F. We, in optimization, of course, just need descent. So predictive properties means good descent properties. And in the worst case, this is just constrained optimization, and this is guaranteed by the matching of the functions at the major iterations. So far, I've tried model management to impose model management on five algorithms, on SQP-like algorithm, SL1QP, augmented Lagrangian, a multi-level algorithm, and the non-constrained algorithm. And so let me just give you an example of how one would go about imposing model management, say on SL1QP. In the basic SL1QP, Fletcher's choice of the penalty function is this sum. And it's an exact penalty function for some values of the weights. The model is going to be composed of the quadratic model of the objective and the weighted sum of linearizations of constraints. And the basic subproblem is going to be to minimize that model subject to staying in a trust region if this is a trust region approach. In model management, we instead are going to replace the model the following way. The function is no longer the quadratic model of the initial objective. It's the some new objective that has the matching properties with the original objective. And the constraints are also obtained from this other low-fidelity model. So the important part is that the components satisfy the consistency condition. So here is the basic algorithm. We choose an iterate. We choose a trust region. And I think I'm missing a slide because I defined some constants, and they're certainly not above. So anyway, use your imagination. So then our algorithm is the following. We do until convergence. This is the step that is different. We construct a model out of the low-fidelity models that has the matching property. So for instance, we apply this trick with the ratio, which we call a beta correction. And then the step computation is going to minimize that model, which in turn is an iterative process. But within that iterative process, you no longer use high-fidelity functions and gradients. You use low-fidelity functions and gradients that are corrected. And then we do the usual trust region thing. We evaluate actual to predicted reduction and do the update. Of course, in the actual to predicted, we don't compare to the quadratic model of the high-fidelity function. We now compare to this other arbitrary model. And the other stuff is usual trust region stuff. So I hope I've convinced you of the reasons why it works theoretically, because we have this matching at some significant point. But in practice, it remains to be shown that the region over which we apply the correction is large enough to make a difference. Because look what's going to happen. We're starting at some point. We're computing the high-fidelity function, high-fidelity gradient. Low-fidelity function, low-fidelity gradient, and that gives us the correction. Then we go off and we start minimizing the low-fidelity function with that correction applied. If the step that we get this way gives us a good decrease, then we go on. This is fine. But if it doesn't, we have to step back, as we do in a trust region method. And if the low-fidelity model gives you no good decrease at all, you'll be reduced to taking really small steps, which is equivalent to doing conventional optimization, which is what you want to avoid. So question becomes, how far does the correction extend? And, of course, that is problem-dependent. Now, a priori, we really don't know what the descent characteristics are. So we want to test cases that are favorable and unfavorable. Favorable cases, when the predictive characteristics of the low-fidelity model are similar to that of the high-fidelity model, and unfavorable is when it doesn't hold. So in the initial models to date, I've seen favorable characteristics in variable resolution models where you just vary the refinement of the grid. And the more difficult combination is variable fidelity physics, where you don't really expect to have very good predictive properties, but you'll see that that might not matter. So recall, looking at aerodynamic optimization, minimizing some combination of lift to drag, subject to constraints. The first problem is where the analysis is Euler. It's in viscid flow. And it's definitely subsonic. Mach number is 0.6. And the design variable, this is a wing, three-dimensional. The design variables are tip chord and the tip trailing edge setback, which is basically how long and how wide the wing is. The objective is minus lift over drag. And the constraints replace some of the constraints that might come from other disciplines, such as bounds on some characteristics of the wing. So the low fidelity model was an analysis on a coarse mesh. This was all done on a Spark 1 station. Sorry. And high fidelity was done on a finer mesh. So let me first give you an example of what those plots will look like. These are the level sets of the objective function. These are the level sets of the constraints. This is an optimum. So this is the first design variable. This is the second design variable. And this lift over drag. And these are those other constraints on various moments on the wing. So what I first did, because the computation was really, really expensive of the gradients, I built replacements of these functions using splines. And I did this all in two variables, of course, so I could at least visualize what's going on. And this upper plot, they represent level sets for the high fidelity function. Let me just check actual function. Oh, yeah. These were built using a lot of evaluations. And this is what the actual functions kind of look like. These are their surrogates built using splines. So the spline approximation provides a very nice function that looks like the high-fidelity function, but it's cheap, so instead we're using it. We're not using it as a surrogate. We're just using it as a substitute for testing. So high-fidelity function, low-fidelity function. Stands to reason that this would work in model management because the functions look very much alike and the descent trends are similar. And sure enough, it worked, and I'll show you the results later. Now, we also wanted a not-so-nice combination, and again, these are the original functions, and these are very naive cubic polynomials. And so they don't look quite as good. So the previous page provided a nice combination. This page provided a not-so-nice combination. It was an early attempt. So the optimization results are as following. And I was using NP-SOL to do single fidelity optimization for comparison. Conventional FQP method on using that polynomial model takes 31 high-fidelity evaluation analysis. And let me explain what this equivalent high-fidelity evaluation means. The code that we used is a multi-grid code. So the work scales with a number of grid points. And when I say equivalent evaluation, we are taking the unit, which is the low-fidelity computation. Now, FQP and model management on polynomials took four high-fidelity evaluations and 51 low-fidelity evaluations. 51 low-fidelity evaluations translates to 51 divided by 8 equivalent evaluations. And so the speed-up factor was about 3. Using a nicer combination of functions, the speed-up was approximately the same. And the savings across the methods were similar. And the methods we tried in here was augmented Lagrangian, SQP, and a multi-level method, which is my own. So it's a reasonable speed-up. Of course, if you're talking a day versus 3 days, it's not that bad. A month versus 3 months, that becomes noticeable. And the bigger the times, the more noticeable it becomes. But the speed up is not quite so fantastic, and the reason is because we really are overkilling the low fidelity computations. Right now, there is no good way to say enough low fidelity, dive out of there, and do a high fidelity evaluation. So the second problem we tried was a 2D airflow optimization, and it was similar parameters, lift over drag, a constraint, and again, a very favorable combination. What I've noticed that in a lot of aerodynamics problems, and I'd venture to maybe generalize a little, in a lot of analysis-based problems, the underlying functions usually look quite nice. A lot of them are even close to convexity, unless you're dealing with some difficult regions. And the problems one gets are usually the artifacts of discretization and the, in general, artifacts of solution, like failure of analysis, for instance. So here, the savings were between 2 and 3. And this problem had really low computational expense, so you couldn't see quite a lot of savings. But I guess the moral of the story here is if you have reasonably similar trends, then you will probably gain. Now, here is a more interesting case. Variable fidelity physics. It's a multi-element airfoil, which means it has flaps and thingies on it. And the viscous effects are really important because this is a design for the transonic regime. The governing equations are time-dependent Reynolds average Navier-Stokes equation. And the flow solver was a locally developed NASA solver. The sensitivity derivatives are hand-coded adjoint. And to answer your question, this is one way really good codes do this, but of course it has to be developed separately. It's really hard, gives you the best answer. People are trying to get away from finite differences for the usual reasons. There is now this reinvented old complex number trick for computing derivatives that gives you very good derivatives. And then, of course, if you can do it, there is automatic differentiation. Automatic differentiation means you have the code, and sometimes it's difficult to get the code just in the right form, but also takes up a lot of space, a lot of extra space. The adjoint might do the same, but certainly gives you consistent and best answers if you can have it. So one of the difficulties of this is the first unstructured mesh solver that takes care of viscous and turbulent modeling. The conditions are transonic, and the global angle of attack is a 1 degree. So the high-fidelity model took, you can see the difference in the meshes. It's not only different physics, of course, takes a different mesh. A very dense mesh for high fidelity, a not-so-dense mesh in the low fidelity. Time per function in high fidelity mode was 21 minutes. Time per function in the low fidelity mode was 23 seconds, nearly negligible in comparison. Now you can really see that the low fidelity is a horrible approximation for high fidelity. These are contours of Mach number about the high fidelity model and the inviscid model. And you can see that right here, the boundary and shear layers are visible for the viscous case, but they are not existent for the inviscid case. So horrible approximation. So we did the computational experiments the following way. The problem was minimize drag subject to bounds and variables. We bundled up the constraints into the objective function. For visualization, did this for two design variables. And the test was solve the problem with PORT, which is a very nice code out of Bell Labs, then solve the problem with model management and use PORT only to solve the low fidelity subproblem. And in case the effects were an artifact of dealing with just two dimensions, the problem could be easily expanded to have shape variables, and that gave us 84 variables in total. So for two variables, turned out it was an unusually perverse and horrible case. You don't really expect to see that in practice. This is the level sets of the high fidelity function, level sets of the low fidelity function. Not only is the form, the shape different, the trends are reversed. So this is a cup pointing this way, and this is a plane pointing that way. And we're trying to approximate that with that. However, to show you why this works, here is the picture of the first iteration. Again, this is the original high-fidelity function. This is the low-fidelity function. If this will be our starting point, we compute the high-fidelity function and the high-fidelity gradient and compute that correction that I was telling you about. Then I did something I wouldn't do in the actual algorithm. I applied the correction to the entire field place of interest. And what the first order does, it reverses the trend of the function. So in our next, in our iteration, the answer we get is right here, which is already pretty close. So that tells you that derivatives are really necessary. And in the next iteration, we have a similar effect and we get the answer. So this was intended for people who care about lift and drag. It's a very good answer. So to give you a performance summary, PORT with just high fidelity analyses took 14 high fidelity evaluations and 13 high fidelity derivative evaluations, which translated to the total of about 12 hours. Model management took 3 high fidelity functions and 3 derivatives, and the rest of the work was done with low fidelity function, which translated to about 2.5 hours with a savings of factor of 5. And the effect remained when we went from 2 design variables to 84 design variables. Now this is already a significant savings. The current results are now in big problems. And this is a 3D aerodynamic optimization. And here it's going to be more problematic. We got very good savings in terms of high fidelity evaluations, but the savings in terms of the actual wall clock time are not as good. And that, again, is the same effect I was showing you with the other 3D problem, because the low fidelity functions are no longer negligible in time computation compared to the high fidelity functions. And here is where we will have to really develop criteria for optimal termination of the low fidelity problem. There is a bigger problem still in the work. So to conclude, it's a promising method. Perhaps for some of the problems it's even an enabling method, because some of the design problems are just not done. People cannot afford to do the computations. It's applicable to a very broad range of models, approximations, virtually anything, as long as you can compose your correction. The question, of course, is the performance. It's applicable to any problem formulation, to black box, which is what I've shown you, what I would call gray box, which is where the analysis is somewhat open to you, and you can formulate at least some of the perhaps discretized equations as the explicit constraints. And this is, I haven't heard this anywhere, but it occurred, might be called the glass box approach, where you completely treat the analysis as an open book, where you, say, use the entire discretized equations as explicit constraints. But whatever you use to compute cheaper and more expensive functions, you can apply this. As I mentioned, computational expense is still a difficulty, and we really need to work on the optimal termination of the low-fidelity function because, of course, the result from mass programming is that we need fraction of Cauchy decrease to get global convergence. Fine, what does this mean for the actual computation? Of course, what I'm looking at right now, they are similar, they are not quite similar, but related results that Richard Carter did a few years ago, where he says about the unconstrained optimization, if the gradient of the high fidelity and the gradient of low fidelity, he used different terms for that, have a certain relation, you can always use low fidelity gradient and get convergence. But how to translate this to this type of problems is an open question. And the question I always get from the engineering audience, I'm not sure I will get it from this audience, is this. Well, if you can approximate anything with anything, why do you even bother with making up low-fidelity models that are physics models? And the reason is because you need something as a low-fidelity model, and building, say, a simple response surface may still be fairly expensive. And then there are a few practical things, such as handling mesh regeneration. When you regenerate a mesh, if a mesh fails, you might want to regenerate it. That, of course, destroys the differentiability of the problem. And the question is how you deal with that. So, and if anybody's interested, there are a few publications. So thanks for listening.